This is the start of sound roll number 8, start of 8. What? Camera roll 26 is just up.
Aircraft take 60.
Sounded natural.
How do you feel at home?
I don't know. Well, I wanted to just ask you something that you just mentioned that you said when the film was off. That we just wanted to get you to say it one more time. What has become of some of the old medicine show people that you worked with?
Steve, the people that I worked with are gone. The show business, the medicine show business, has been a dead issue for several years, as far as I know anything about. And all the boys that I worked with that played comedy and the doctor and all, they have died. They passed on several years ago. I'm the only living one that was on the medicine shows that I was on. And I seldom see anybody that was in the show business that started on a medicine show. I understand that Red Skelton started on a medicine show, and I truthfully think he did because I've watched him work on his television program, and he used a lot of slapstick stuff that was used in medicine shows. His shows were practically a medicine show on those series that I watched him work on. Other than Red, I don't know of anyone else. Someone told me maybe George Gobel had a little medicine show experience, but I don't know that to be true. But I don't know of any other one that's in the business except one of the boys that's on the Opry. He told me that he had some medicine show experience, and that's Kurt McGee. And Kurt is now 81 years of age.
So do you think that whole era is about to come to an end?
I think so. I believe within the next, I'm going to try to live as long as I can, but 5 or 6 years, 10 years at the most, I would say, they'll find nobody was ever on a medicine show. I don't think so. As far as I know now, most of them are gone. I can only know two or three, but of course I can know, I'm just in one section of the country. There's others in other sections of the country that might have been on some shows and still living and in good health, but I never hear all of them. They went into something else rather than the entertainment world. Some of them that were possibly on the med show might have gone into burlesque. Now but burlesque is dead. You know burlesque is, you seldom see a burlesque show. A lot of the comics would have made fine burlesque boys because they know how to tell a joke. They know how to lead into it. They know how to tell it. They know how to get out of it. They know properly about their stage and everything. Things like that you learn on a med show. And you have to learn them fast and be able to tell them and get the audience in an uproar. And vaudeville show, the old traveling minstrel show, you don't hear it no more, it's gone. All those old end men, you know, they were possibly med show men at one time. I didn't know them, but they were possibly on medicine shows. They possibly got their experience on the medicine show. Just like me, I cut my eye teeth on a medicine show. That's the first entertainment experience I've ever had. And when I got into it, I loved it so much, I just stayed with it. And, of course, I went into country music and liked to starve to death for years and years trying to stay with something I loved. And I've fought every way in the world to stay on. And I have... got my head above the water and can live out of country music. I would love, once again, I would really love to go and perform on a medicine show for 10 days, like just like we did with two or three good comedians and a man that could make the medicine talk, not to try to sell medicine, not to try to sell anything, but for the fun of seeing people walk down and coming in free and just watch that medicine show perform. The people of the country now wouldn't know how to act. They'd fall into it because it has so much laughter and fun. It would spread all over the town in just one performance. The next day it would spread over. You take a town like Bailey here, if you perform one night, they would all, the whole within a 5-mile radius would turn out here and come into the medicine show. I think it would really draw, but I don't think it could sell medicine. I don't think it could sell those the corn remedies or salves and things like that. I think that's all the past. But the show business is not gone. The medicine show still lives on. And in younger people, they've heard me tell these jokes. They've heard my act tell the jokes. And these boys that we have run into here from over North Carolina, they know every one of the jokes that I used to know. They've heard me tell them. Greasy, he's full of them. He's a real medicine show man. He has his roots are in the medicine show, and that's where he came up from. He came up in the same school that I did. I don't know about ages, and he was a little bit different part of the country than I'm in. But we both have the same understanding of the medicine show. And it's not going to be long, and you can look at me and look at him and say, listen, it ain't going to be long to both of you, going to be gone. And your medicine shows people are going to be out of the way.
When you close your eyes and hear these jokes, do you see a picture of Doc Howard's show?
I can.
How does it look?
Looks wonderful. I just would give anything in the world once again to stand on the stage with Dr. Howard and Jake Tindall and Tom Ashley on each side, stand up there and watch 2,000, 2,500, 3,000 people out there where you'd be way above them. Just watch them bend over and laugh and die with laughter. And then after you do a joke, you come back and sing a song that will make them listen and a lot of times make them cry. You make them cry and then the doctor sells that medicine. While they're sentimental, but you get them back out of it with jokes. You bring your crowd back out of that. You don't want to, in a show. When I handle a show today, even the Grand Ole Opry show, not on the Opry, but on stage. If I go out on a show, and I carry the show, I make it work. Have a high point and a low point. And I'll vary in between them, between each song, every song. If I sing one, it'll bring you down low and make you cry. Your next thing, you bet, you're going to get a laugh out of it, or it's going to stimulate you up. It'll be something fast and furious. It'll be a fast fiddle tune or a good joke or something that'll make you smile. Something bring you out of that crying spell. And then when I get you built up again, I'll let you back down. And then when I let you back down, I'm going to bring you back up, I'm going to bring you back up to the top. And that's my idea of performing, is to keep an audience happy, make them smile, make them cry, and you'll have a good show.
Thank you.
Do we have a beat?
We have a slate clapper,
okay.
I think.
Here it comes. Why don't you flop that right on down the line? Let's get that someplace where it'll dry. Lay it out on
the scrape it across the stand. Keep it off the ground.
Yeah, I was going to say we could put it across the whatchamacallit.
Put it on the seat.
Yeah.
That was just some wild sound of the people working on the stage with the plastic after the rain.
nice mess, huh?
Okay, on Friday morning, that's tomorrow morning. These old shows used to have what they called the... You guys are basically ready? Okay, thanks a lot. They would have what they called... They would ballyhoo the town, which was basically kind of a parade down the main street. And so obviously we need all four of the vehicles running for that. And it's a big logistical problem to get the crowds right, to get the cameras placed and everything. And if we have to worry about the vehicles, it's really going to screw us up. Because it's a matter, we might have to make two passes, you know what I mean? That's for Friday. That's the first thing.
That slate just read 61. It's Thursday morning. There were some scenes around the clearing the stage of the wet rain and stuff. That was 61. It was a tail slate. And I hit the beep once real short by mistake and then longer. This is the arrival of the participants.
Park anywhere you want.
62 head.
Those banners at the top.
That's right.
They've flopped down, right, and no, it don't look
but
like anything
it looks,
bad.
It
no,
looks good. That's right.
Held up real good. Yeah, real good.
What would this be like on a medicine show? Would this be a bad tragedy, May?
Well, no, yeah, it could be. But see, what's happened here is you people have built a stage that's far superior to what we used to build. We used to just tack it together and then let them take the lumber at the end of the week or, you know, and keep it. But you folks really did a superb job here building this thing.
What's the longest arena that you have rained off at a time?
Oh, we've been rained off as much as a month.
Yeah, I told him 3 weeks. That's the longest we ever had. And isn't that a mess?
If it runs that long. If you get a rain that runs for as much as 3 or 4 weeks, you just don't move. You wait until it's over because what's the point? You know, you stay on the location and try to get that 1 week in that spot unless the lot is so muddy and bad that you can't work,
but
you know?
But the expense is going on.
That's the problem. That is the problem. Right.
Fred, what happened when the 3 weeks...
Well, we'd either stay in the location if the lot was decent enough to continue working on it, or if it wasn't a decent lot, then of course we'd have to go somewhere else. You know, you don't want people wading around up to their knees in mud.
You know what we did one time? One of the boys had his dear old father with him, and at the end of 3 weeks, we didn't have a dime, not a penny.
Yeah.
So we had to leave that father as hostage in the hotel. We said we'll be back after him next week. Well, we didn't get it. We had another week of rain. This went on for more than 3 weeks more. And then
so that was a free board bill
exactly.
for him.
He was still eating at the coffee shop.
Right.
And finally, they called up. The hotel did in desperation and said, come and get him. Whatever happened, just get him out of
that's
here.
That's kind of a bad situation.
I
really?
Should think so. Yes.
Yeah, we've had a lot of rain back years ago when I was a kid, but I don't remember it being such a terrible catastrophe except you know, mostly the worst experience we had was on the circus.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, that's right.
Because that thing has to go up and down in one day, and that really is bad. But this thing can set for a week, a whole week in a location. It can set for a month. It can set for 6 weeks if you have to. But, of course, nobody looks forward to that kind of rain. But this rain was sorely needed here, so one of the things my dad used to say was, we can spare the days because if the farmer doesn't have his crop, we don't
right.
get the money.
That's right.
That's what it amounts to.
What about the old Model Ts and the house cars?
Well, now, let me tell you, they were called Tin Lizzies, and when you got it, believe it or not, with those little narrow tires, you could get through mud a whole lot better with those little gizmos than you can these fancy new cars. But we used to cuss them because we had to push them a lot of times in the mud. And sometimes if you ran out of gas with a Model T and you were going uphill, you had to back uphill. Did you ever hear of that?
Always, because that's because of the gravity feed of the
right.
tank. It was placed in a position that you had to be on that angle.
Yeah, you had to back uphill to use up the last drops of gas to get to the gas station.
On long hills, we used to take a piece of wood, a log like this, and you pull both the spark and the gas down till the motor was just about ready to jump out of there, racing. And then you punch down on that low pedal, the left-hand pedal, if you remember, and it would leap ahead about 3 feet up this hill. Then you follow it with this log.
Yeah.
Then you crank it up again, start another, punch that left lever, and up she'd go, maybe another 3 feet, all the way up a long hill like that.
Because you were running out of gas?
No,
oh,
this is because of the lack of power.
Oh.
We were so overloaded, of course, with all the equipment on there.
There's an interesting story about that, talking about wheel chocks. My dad was a fantastic wood carver, and he carved many sets of Punch and Judy figures and sold them, and my mother dressed them, and they both painted them. And the last time I saw the last Punch, we took the whole group of Punch and Judy figures on the road with us. I think this was in 1930, just before I ran away and got married. And I loved those figures, and I don't know what happened to most of them, but I remember Punch distinctly, because we were going up a hill, and like you said, the old Model T was worm gear truck, and it went all of, I think, about 15 miles an hour at top speed. And so we were going along, and the truck wasn't doing so well, and Daddy had to have a wheel block. Well, every time we'd run out, we'd find a rock and throw under it and then jump in, and we'd go maybe a quarter of a mile or so, and then we'd get another rock and throw it in. We got to one area where there were no rocks, nothing we could pick up, and Daddy threw Punch to me and said, put him under the wheel. And I just looked out the back window and looked at Punch laying there in the road and cried. He wouldn't let me get out and get him.
In 1928, we had a Packard 1912 that had seven speeds ahead, solid rubber tires. And finally, the brakes went out on that thing because of the broken drive shaft. We wired that together with fence wire. We started up one of those long, long hills towing it.
Yeah.
And the piano player, who usually drove that truck, would have absolutely no part of it without brakes. And it was up to me to have to drive it, I remember. So I looked out the
took
side.
Took somebody with intestinal fortitude to drive something with no brakes.
Completely stupid, right. And I looked out at the side, and I could see one of these fence wires break, and then the second and the third. Instantly, they all broke, and I started backward down that hill. No brake of any kind. And I'll bet that hill was at least a quarter of a mile, maybe half a mile. And I thought first I was going to make it all right, and then a car came down the other one, meeting me. And here is a great big old Packard truck with the piano always right up against my back of my neck there.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to steer it backwards down that hill, and very remarkably, it finally came to a halt down at the bottom. And
must get Bronco West to tell his Model T story too, but because that is hilarious. It sounds like something out of a Max Sennett film. It really is funny how his dad lost some kind of little pin in one of the wheels that threw the brakes off, and the event that he went through, and the way he describes it is really hilarious. You'll have to get him to tell you that sometime.
How about did you used to say that you used to use creek beds? Can you talk about that?
Oh, you just forded all the creeks. The only creeks that you didn't ford was something with a strong bank that you couldn't go over. You'd come to any kind of a creek. You just drive over the pebbles and rocks and go on through the water, sometimes as much as knee deep.
Did you ever use the creek beds for the Model T's? The dried up creek beds?
Oh, no. No, I know what you mean. As a road, you mean? Oh, no. The interesting thing about our transportation in those days was, as I remember, the territory that we worked in, you'd be crossing somebody's property. For instance, like now, suppose from here to the highway over there was 5 miles. All right, we've got this landowner, you've got that landowner, you've got the next one across the street, and so on. And all of them would have fences. And the reason for the fences, they had cattle, and they didn't want to get their herds scrambled and everything. So the roads were not public roads, but they were public roads, if you know what I mean. You were allowed to use them. But the law was, and it was an unwritten law, that you must leave the gate in the position you found it in. In other words, if the gate was open, the farmer was going to run some cattle through there. Don't close it. You'd mess him up. If the gate was closed, be sure you shut that gate behind you, or you might get their stuff all mixed up. So this was a big annoyance because some of the fields weren't very long. You know, they'd be maybe 400 feet, 500 feet. So every 500-600 feet, you might be opening and shutting gates all day long to get somewhere. That was another thing that slowed you down. Now, if you had a lot of people, later when the dirt roads came in where there weren't any gates anymore, if you had a lot of people on the show, you had to mark the route so everybody knew where to make their turns. The earliest marking that I know about was we'd break off a branch, break off a tree limb or something. And if you were going to make a left turn at a crossroads, you'd break off two tree limbs and throw one here and one there. Don't cross any tree limbs. You just turn left where the road was open. Just break off grass, anything, and throw it in the way. Later, they took white shoe polish with the dauber, and they made arrows on the poles. And now in this day and age, you can drive through towns and see arrows on poles, and that means that for the circuses to use these markings to travel by.
Okay. Nate, can you just talk about your old house car?
Are we going to sleep?
Point to our house car, too.
63 middle.
The where do you want me? I'm right where I was.
Sure. All right. Wait a minute.
Would it be better if I'm
you
facing
want me
this
in here
way?
Anymore, Steve? You want me
Go ahead.
Yeah. The only thing not that it makes any difference. I guess I was standing this way. This is better. This is the this red vehicle you see back here is very similar. Not exactly, of course, because no two people ever built them exactly alike, but it's very similar to some of the house cars that my father had. The first one that he had was made by Dick Knight of the Musical Knights, who was well known in this area as a performer on medicine shows and in vaudeville too. They both played musical instruments, and they transported themselves in their own homemade Model T house car. And later he got a nice bigger one that he was making, so he sold my father his house car. And it was covered with scenic paintings because he was also a scenic artist. That was quick.
Slater. Second slate, 64 head.
Now, before you start, you want Bob in this in
sure.
A couple of minutes?
Yeah. You think Bob's going to walk over? Did your stage ever blow down? Did you ever have blowdown?
Wait, let me finish what we started on the house car. I can go back. This house car, the first one that my dad had was a Model T that he bought from Dick Knight of the Musical Knights. And everybody that had a house car that built their own would build it in a different way. But believe it or not, as little as that thing is, if it was just a man and his wife, he had a bed in there, he had a cook stove, he had a way to bathe himself. But he had to depend on the chick sales in the neighborhood where he lived for his toilet facilities. And if somebody wanted to be real nasty and keep you out of their town, they just locked their chick sales on you because there was no place else to go.
We had a man like that that kept using this at the corner of the lot all the time.
Uh-oh.
And some very irate old lady came out there. And of course, he was inside in the chick sales, as you call him.
Yeah.
She waited for him to come out, and she just screamed at him, called him everything she could think of. But he was a very quiet, diplomatic, too, old gentleman. He stood there, and he listened and quietly waited for her to get finished. And finally, he said, Madam, are you all finished? And she she said, yes, yes, I am. Well, he said, I was finished long before you were.
I like that. Now, the question again? You asked.
Did your stages ever blow down?
Oh, yes. My father said one time he was sitting by his platform with his legs crossed, smoking a cigarette, and he was contemplating something. And it was like it is now. The sun was shining, and everything was peaceful and quiet. And a little whirlwind started, you know, a little dust devil, they call him, started going by his foot. And he sat there, and he looked at it, and he thought, now I could stomp that and stop it, you know. And he says, that burn thing went way down the street and turned around and turned his darn platform over. He says, I could have stomped it and stopped it. And he had to rebuild the whole platform. Yeah, that's happened a lot of times. The worst blowdowns were actually tents. Like you have a little living tent that you're living in before the house car era. And I can remember one tent blew down one time. It was a pyramid tent. You know what I mean? It's four-sided and built just like a pyramid with side walls about that high. There was two of these behind the big tent dramatic show we were with at that time. And that thing had a pole down the middle, and there was a little table on it, and there was a wash basin, and everybody brought their makeup and put on there. There's one for the ladies and one for the men, and a bucket of water. And when the wind started blowing, my mother grabbed a pole and told my brother and me to get underneath the table. We'd be safer under there. And a good gust of wind came. That pole went up and carried my mother about that high off the ground and back down on the ground. The bucket went up, turned over, and came down with that water on my head. Have you ever heard yourself yelling inside of a water bucket? It isn't a pleasant sound. It really scared me to death, and I'm still afraid of a storm. I mean, when I'm around canvas, yesterday was a treat because we got to go into that beautiful museum here in Bailey. That was great. That's a beautiful little museum. I really enjoyed that. Did you ever have a blowdown?
Floods was worse than the blowdown.
Floods?
Yeah.
Where was the worst flood?
In Virginia, right out of Roanoke, a little dam broke and come down in the middle of the night, and everything was floating around. Everything floated out.
Oh, you're talking about with the show?
Yeah.
When I was with you,
no,
that wasn't.
Doc.
Oh, with Doc?
That
we had another bad. One with, see, we made a transition out of the medicine show into the boxing and wrestling chimps. And we were still doing medicine show and the chimps at this time. And we were showing in a little place called Starkey, outside of Roanoke, Virginia. And they had built a racetrack beside the creek. And it was downriver from where our lot was. And the racetrack was built up to, what was it, a couple hundred feet high. So that the racetrack was way up here, the creek is down here, and our show lot is down almost to creek level. And there came a torrential rain, about like we had yesterday, only it continued almost all day long. And that creek kept rising and rising, and it came within that much of being inside of the floor of the cages for our animals. And I stood on the bank praying all night long that it wouldn't get any deeper. But believe me, at one time, that place had been way up high in another flood. And our butane tanks from our trailers were brought back to us by people from way down creek, possibly a couple of miles. And some of our fences and pieces of tent. The cutest blow down, though, probably happened when I was a little kid. My mother carried an iron bedstead for us, and we used to sleep in an iron bedstead in an A-top. And this storm came, and she also had a fly over it, and the fly is so that there'll be a little air passage between the tent top and the fly, so it's like it's in the shade. It's almost like being under a tree. And the wind came along and picked that thing up and blew it away. But the funny part of it was, my mother said, jump in the bed, cover up. If the wind blows, you know, and the tent falls, it'll fall on the head and footboard and you won't get hurt. But the tent didn't fall. It went right out over top of us, and there we were out in the storm in an iron bedstead. The next day, the people started bringing in little pieces of rag about this long and about that wide that had been the top and the fly, and said, is this stuff yours? This looks like show stuff, you know, and they were bringing in rags hand over fist. So then for the next week or so, my mother was sewing up Indian costumes. She used all that for that khaki canvas for fringes on the coats and the dresses and everything. We had a nice Bigfoot Wallace wardrobe then. It really made a nice outfit.
seemed to have done more damage, the blowdowns, as I recall, and organizations like circuses and carnivals that I used to do a lot of that during the summer up through the north.
Yeah.
Winds would come through there and tip over the Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
I've had the merry-go-round go over, and sometimes not a thing left standing on the whole lot.
Right.
It would tip over the corn game. All the plaster would wind up in the water and mud down at the bottom.
Right.
In fact, as you know, they always used to call those mud shows those little circuses, you know.
Yeah.
And
right.
for a very good reason, too, because you spent most of your time that way. One of the fellows had a trailer, a house car, as you talk about, in which he installed a Buick transmission ahead of a Ford transmission. It was a genius of a thing, because this thing had more power than you can imagine. And anything that got stuck in the mud, usually an ordinary Model T or anything like that, he would hook this great big monstrosity, which he had contrived. And he used to tell us, when I put that down into Buick low, and then Ford low, and he says, when I get her into low, 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 it'll pull anything that's loose, he says. It didn't make any difference then.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We had, North Carolinians will probably remember Hazel pretty well. That was a bad storm. And we were on a carnival with the Gorilla Show at that time. That was at Roxborough. And after the show that night, Bob said, I'm going to tear everything down because that thing might come this way. It's coming up the coast and it just might come this way. So he started tearing down, and as the carnies were going by us, they said, what are you doing? You going to leave in the middle of the week or whatever day it was, you know? And Bob said, no, I'm just getting ready for that storm. I don't want my stuff to blow away. Well, in the Roxborough Fairgrounds, they have a chain link fence all around the thing, high chain link fence. And these carnies all laughed at him, and they said, those things don't come inland. It's just, that's something that's going to happen all along the coast. You're way inland. Forget it, you know. So Bob said, no, I'm still going to tear it down. We can put it back up tomorrow night when the storm is over. So we